Cutty and Detritus were proceeding along Phaedra Road. It was lined with tanneries and brick kilns and timber yards and was not generally considered a beauty spot, which was why Cutty suspected they'd been given it to patrol. To get to know the city, it got them out of the way. Sergeant Cullen thought they made the place look untidy. There was no sound but the clink of his boots and the thump of Detritus's knuckles on the ground. Finally, Cutty said, "I just want you to know that I don't like being teamed up with you any more than you..." "Any more than you like being teamed up with me." "Right. But if we're going to have to make the best of it, there better be some changes, okay? Like what?" Like it's ridiculous you not even being able to count. I know trolls can count. Why can't you? Can count. How many fingers am I holding up then?" Detritus squinted. 2. "Okay. Now how many fingers am I holding up?" 2 and one more. So 2 and one more is..." Detritus looked panicky. This was calculus territory. 2 and one more is 3. 2 and one more is 3. Now how many? 2 and 2. That's 4. 4-er. Now how many? Cutty tried 8 fingers. 2-4. Cutty looked surprised. He'd expected many, or possibly lots. What's a 2-4? A 2 and a 2 and a 2 and a 2. Cutty put his head on one side. He said. "Okay, a 2-4 is what we call an 8. 8. You know," said Cutty, subjecting the troll to a long critical stare, "you might not be as stupid as you look. This is not hard. Let's think about this. I mean, I'll think about this, and you can join in when you know the words." Vimes slammed the watch house door behind him. Sergeant Cullen looked up from his desk. He had a pleased expression. "What's been happening, Fred?" Cullen took a deep breath. "Interesting stuff, Captain. Me and Nobby did some detecting up at the Fool's Guild. I've written it all down, what we found out. It's all here. A proper report. Fine. All written down. Look. Properly. Punctuation and everything. Well done. It's got commas and everything. Look. I'm sure I shall enjoy it, Fred. And Cutty and Detritus have found out stuff, too. Cutty's done a report, too, but it's not got so much punctuation as mine. How long have I been asleep? 6 hours. I've tried to make mental space for all of this, and failed. I've got to get something inside me," he said. "Some coffee or something. And then the world will somehow be better." Anyone strolling along Phaedra Road might have seen a troll and a dwarf, apparently, shooting at one another in excitement. "A 232, and 8, and a 1. See? How many bricks in that pile?" Pause. "A 16, an 8, a 4, a 1. Remember what I said about dividing by 8 and 2? Longer pause. 29. Right. You can get there. I can get there. You're a natural at counting to 2. I'm a natural at counting to 2. If you can count to 2, you can count to anything. If I can count to 2, I can count to anything. And the world is your mollusk. My mollusk. What's a mollusk?" Angua had to scurry to keep up with Carrot. "Aren't we going to look at the opera house?" she said. "Later. Anyone up there will be long gone by the time we get there. We must tell the captain." "You think she was killed by the same thing as Hammerhawk?" "Yes. There are 9 birds, that's right. There are 1 bridge, right. There are 4 tin boats, all right. There are 1,364 bricks. Okay, I should give it a rest now. You don't want to wear everything out by counting. There are 1 running man." "What? Where?" "Shamharga's coffee was like molten lead, but it had this in its favor. When you drunk it, There was this overwhelming feeling of relief that you got to the bottom of the cup. That, said Vimes, is a bloody awful cup of coffee, Sham. Right, said Harga. I mean, I've drunk a lot of bad coffee in my time, but that was like having a saw dragged across my tongue. How long had it been boiling? What's today's date, said Harga, cleaning a glass. He was generally cleaning glasses. No one ever found out what happened to the clean ones. August the 15th. What year? Sham Harga smiled, or at least moved various muscles around his mouth. Sham Harga had run a successful eatery for many years, by always smiling, never extending credit, and realizing that most of his customers wanted meals properly balanced between the four food groups, sugar, starch, grease, and burnt crunchy bits. I'd like a couple of eggs, said Vimes, with yolks real hard, but the whites so runny that they drip like treacle. And I want bacon, that special bacon, all covered with bony nodules and dangling bits of fat. And a slice of fried bacon bread. The kind that makes your arteries go clang just by looking at it. Tough order, said Harga. You managed it yesterday, and give me some more coffee. Black as midnight on a moonless night. Harga looked surprised. That wasn't like Vimes. How black's that, then, he said. Oh, pretty damn black, I should think. Not necessarily. What? You get more stars on a moonless night. Stands to reason. They show up more. It can be quite bright on a moonless night. Vimes sighed. On overcast moonless night, he said. Harga looked carefully at his coffee pot. Cumulus or Cirro Nimbus. I'm sorry, what did you say? You get city lights reflected off cumulus because it's low-lying, see? Mind you can get high-altitude scatter off the ice crystals. And a moonless night, said Vimes in a hollow voice, that is as black as that coffee. Right. And a donut. Vimes grabbed Harga's stained vest and pulled him until they were nose-to-nose. A donut as donut-y as a donut made of flour, water, one large egg, sugar, a pinch of yeast, cinnamon to taste, and a jam, jelly, or rat filling, depending on national or species preference. Okay? Not as donut-y as something in any way metaphorical. Just a donut. One donut. A donut. Yes, you only had to say. Harga brushed off his vest, gave Vimes a hurt look, and went back into the kitchen. Stop! In the name of the law.
What's the law's name, then? How should I know?
Why are we chasing him? Because he's running away. Cuddy had only been a guard for a few days, but already he had absorbed one important and basic fact. It is almost impossible for anyone to be in a street without breaking the law. There was a whole quiverful of offenses available to a policeman who wishes to pass the time of day with a citizen, ranging from loitering with intent through obstruction to lingering. While being the wrong color / shape / species / sex. It occurred briefly to him that anyone not making a dash for it would, when they saw detritus knuckling along at high speed behind them, was probably guilty of contravening the being bloody stupid act of 1581. But it was too late to take that into account. Someone was running, and they were chasing. They were chasing because he was running, and he was running because they were chasing. Vimes sat down with his coffee and looked at the thing he'd picked up from the rooftop. It looked like a short set of Pan pipes, provided Pan was restricted to 6 notes, all of them the same. They were made of steel welded together. There was a strip of serrated metal along one side, like a flattened out cogwheel, and the whole thing reeked of fireworks. He laid it carefully beside his plate. He read Sergeant Cullen's report. Fred Cullen had spent some time on it, probably with a dictionary. It went as follows. Report of Sergeant F. Cullen, approximately 10 a.m. today, August 15th. I proceeded in the company of Corporal C.W. St. J. Nobbs to the Fool's Guild and Joculators in God Street, Whereupon we conversed with Clown Boffo, who said Clown Bino, the corpus derelicti, was definitely seen by him. Clown Boffo, leaving the guild the previous morning just after the explosion. This is deadbent, in my opinion. The reason being, the stiff was dead at least 2 days. Corporal C.W. St. J. Nobbs agrees. So someone is telling meat pies. Never trust anyone who falls on his arse for a living. Whereupon Dr. Whiteface met us and damn near gave us the derriere velocite out of the place. It seemed to us, viz. Me and Corporal C.W. St. J. Nobbs, that the fools are worried that it might have been the assassins, but we don't know why. Also, Clown Boffo went on about not us looking for Vino's nose, but he had a nose on when he saw him here. So we said to the Clown Boffo, did he mean a false nose? And he said, no, a real one. Bugger off. Whereupon we came back here. Vimes worked out what derriere velocite meant. The whole nose business looked like a conundrum wrapped up in an enigma. Or at least in Sergeant Cullen's handwriting, which was pretty much the same thing. Why be asked to look for a nose that wasn't lost? He looked at Cuddy's report, written in the careful, angular handwriting of someone more used to runes, and sagas. Captain Vimes, this herewith is the chronicle of me, Lance Constable Cuddy, bright with the morning and high our hearts were when we proceeded to the Alchemist's Guild, where events eventuated, as I shall now sing. These included exploding balls. As to the quest upon which we were sent, we were informed that the attached piece of paper attached is in the handwriting of Leonard of Quorum, who vanished in mysterious circumstances. It is how to make a powder called number one powder, which is used in fireworks. Mr. Silverfish, the alchemist, says any alchemist knows it. Also, in the margin of the paper is a drawing of the gun, because I asked my cousin, Grabpot, about Leonard, and he used to sell paints to Leonard, and he recognized the writing and said Leonard always wrote backwards because he was a genius. I have copied here some same herewith. Vimes laid the papers down and put the piece of metal on top of them. Then he reached to in his pocket and produced a couple of metal pellets. A stick, the gargoyles had said. Vimes looked at the sketch. It looked, as Cuddy had noted, like the stock of a crossbow with a pipe on the top of it. There were a few sketches of strange mechanical devices alongside it, and a couple of the little six-pipe things. The whole drawing looked like a doodle. Someone, possibly this Leonard, had reading a book about fireworks and had scribbled in the margins. Fireworks. Well, fireworks. But fireworks weren't a weapon. Crackers went bang. Rockets went up, more or less. But all you could be sure of them hitting was the sky. Hammerhawk was noted for his skill with mechanisms. That wasn't a major dwarfish attribute. People thought it was, but it wasn't. They were skilled with metal, all right. And they made good swords and jewelry. But they weren't too technical. When it came to things like cogwheels and springs, Hammerhawk was unusual. So, supposing there was a weapon, supposing there was something about it that was different, strange, terrifying. No, that couldn't be it. It'd either end up all over the place, or it'd be destroyed. It wouldn't end up in the Assassin's Museum. What got put in museums? Things that hadn't worked, or had got lost, or ought to be remembered. So where's the sense in putting our fireworks on show? There have been a lot of locks on the door. So, not a museum you just wandered into. Maybe you had to be a high-up assassin, and one day one of the guild leaders would take you down there at dead of night and say, for some reason, the face of the patrician loomed up at this point. Once again, Vimes felt the edge of something, some fundamental central thing. Where'd he go? Where'd he go? There was a maze of alleys around the doors. Cuddy leaned against a wall and fought for breath. There he goes, shouted Detritus, along Whalebone Lane. He lumbered off in pursuit. Vimes put down his coffee cup. Whosoever had shot those lead balls at him had been very accurate across several hundred yards and had got off six shots faster than anyone could fire an arrow. Vimes picked up the pipes. Six little pipes, six shots, and you could carry a pocketful of these things. You could shoot further, faster, more accurately than anyone else with any other kind of weapon. So, a new type of weapon. Much, much faster than a bow. The assassins wouldn't like that. They wouldn't like that at all. They weren't even keen on bows. The assassins preferred to kill up close. So they put the gun safely under lock and key. Gods alone knew how they'd come by it in the first place. And a few senior assassins would know about it. They pass on the secret. Beware of things like this. Down there, he went into Grope Alley. Slow down, slow down. Why? Said Detritus. It's a dead end. The two watchmen lumbered to a halt. Cuddy knew that he was currently the brains of the partnership, even though Detritus was presently counting, his face beaming with pride, the stones in the wall beside him. Why had they chased someone halfway across the city? Because they'd run away. No one ran away from the watch. Thieves just flashed their licenses. Unlicensed thieves had nothing to fear from the watch, since they'd saved up all their fear for the Thieves Guild. Assassins always obeyed the letter of the law, and honest men didn't run away from the watch. Running away from the watch was downright suspicious. The origin of Grope Alley's name was fortunately lost in the celebrated mists of time, but it had come to be deserved. It had turned into a kind of tunnel as upper stories were built out and over it, leaving a few inches of sky. Cuddy peered around the corner and into the gloom. Click, click. It came from the deep in the darkness. Detritus? Yeah? Did he have any weapons? Just a stick. One stick. Okay, only I smell fireworks. Cuddy pulled his head back very carefully. There had been the smell of fireworks in Hammerhawk's workshop, and Mr. Hammerhawk ended up with a big hole in his chest, and a sense of named dread, which is much more specific and terrifying than nameless dread, was stealing over Cuddy. It was something similar to the feeling you get when you're playing a high-stakes game, and your opponent suddenly grins, and you realize that you don't know all the rules, but you do know you'll be lucky to get out of this, if you're very fortunate, you're short. On the other hand, he could picture Sergeant Colin's face. We chased this man into an alley, Sarge, and then we came away. He drew his sword. Lance Constable Detritus? Yes, Lance Constable Cuddy? Follow me. Why? The damn thing was made of metal, wasn't it? 10 minutes in a hot crucible, and that'd be the end of the problem. Something like that. Something dangerous. Why not just get rid of it? Why keep it? But that wasn't human nature, was it? Sometimes things were too fascinating to destroy. He looked at the strange metal tubes, six short pipes welded together, sealed firmly at one end. There was a small hole in the top side of each of the pipes. Vimes slowly picked up one of the lumps of lead. The alley twisted once or twice, but there were no other alleys or doors off it. There was one at the far end. It was larger than a normal door and heavily constructed. Where are we? Whispered Cuddy. Don't know, said Detritus. Back of the docks somewhere. Cuddy pushed open the door with his sword. Cuddy? Yeah? We walked 79 steps. That's nice. Cold air rushed past them. Meat store, whispered Cuddy. Someone picked the lock. He slipped through into a high, gloomy room, as large as a temple, which in some ways it resembled. Faint light crept through the high, ice-covered windows. From rack upon rack, all the way to the ceiling, hung meat carcasses. They were semi-transparent and so very cold. Cuddy's breath turned to crystals in the air. Oh my, said Detritus. I think this is the Pork Futures Warehouse and More Pork Road. What? Used to work here, said the troll. Used to work everywhere. Go away, you stupid troll. You too thick, he added gloomily. Is there any way out? The main door is in More Pork Street, but no one comes in here for months. Till pork exists. Cuddy shivered. Probably no other world in the multiverse has warehouses and for things with only... Just 1 minute. I need to make the text a little bigger. Probably no other world in the multiverse has warehouses for things which only exist in Potentia. But the Pork Futures Warehouse in Ankh-Morpork is a product of the patrician's rules about baseless metaphors. The literal-mindedness of citizens who assume that everything must exist somewhere, and the general thinness of the fabric of reality around Ankh, which is so thin that it's as thin as a very thin thing. The net result is that that trading in pork futures, in pork that doesn't exist yet, led to the building of the warehouse to store it until it does. The extremely low temperatures are caused by the imbalance in the temporal energy flow. At least, that's what the wizards in the high-energy magic building say, and they've got proper pointy hats and letters after their names, so they know what they're talking about. You in here? He shouted. It's the watch. Step out now. A dark figure appeared from behind a couple of prepigs. Now what do we do? Said Detritus. The distant figure raised what looked like a stick, holding it like a crossbow, and fired. The first shot zinged off Cuddy's helmet. A stony hand clamped onto the dwarf's head, and Detritus pushed Cuddy behind him. But then the figure was running toward them, still firing. Detritus blinked. Five more shots, one after another, punctured his breastplate. And then the running man was through the open door, slamming it behind him. Captain Vimes? He looked up. It was Captain Quirk of the Day Watch, with a couple of his men behind him. Yes? You come with us. And give me your sword. What? I think you heard me, Captain. Look, it's me, Quirk, Sam Vimes. Sam Vimes? Don't be a fool. I ain't a fool. I've got men with crossbows. Men, it's you that'd be the fool if you resist arrest. Oh, I'm under arrest? Only if you don't come with us. The patrician was in the oblong office, staring out of the window. The multi-belled cacophony of 5 o'clock was just dying away. Vimes saluted from the back. Veterinary looked like a carnivorous flamingo. Ah, Vimes, he said. Without looking around. Come here, will you? And tell me what you see. Vimes hated guessing games, but he joined the patrician anyway. The oblong office had a view over half the city, although most of it was rooftops and towers. Vimes's imagination peopled the towers with men holding guns. The patrician would be an easy target. What do you see out there, Captain? City of Ankh-Morpork, sir, said Vimes, keeping his expression carefully blank. And does it put you in mind of anything, Captain? Lime scratched his head. If he was going to play games, he was going to play games. Well, sir, when I was a kid, we owned a cow once, and one day it got sick, and it was always my job to clean out the cow shed, and it reminds me of a clock, said the patrician. Big wheels, little wheels, all clicking away. The little wheels spin and the big wheels turn, all at different speeds. You see, but the machine works, and that is the most important thing. The machine keeps going, because when the machine breaks down... He turned suddenly, strode to his desk with his usual predatory stalk, and sat down. Or again, sometimes a piece of grit might get into the wheels, throwing them off balance. One speck of grit. Veterinary looked up and flashed Vimes a mirthless smile. I won't have that. Vimes stared at the wall. I believe I told you to forget about certain recent events, Captain. Sir. Yet it appears that the watch have been getting in the wheels. Sir. What am I to do with you? Couldn't say, sir. Vimes minutely examined the wall. He wished Carrot was here. The lab might be simple, but he was so simple that sometimes he saw things that the subtle missed. And he kept coming up with simple ideas that stuck in your mind. Policemen, for example, he'd said to Vimes one day, while they were proceeding along the street of Small Gods, "Do you know where policeman comes from, sir?" Vimes hadn't. "Polis used to mean city," said Carrot. "That's what policeman means. A man for the city. Not many people know that. The word polite comes from polis, too. It used to mean the proper behavior from someone living in a city. Man of the city. Carrot was always throwing out stuff like that. Like copper, Vimes had believed all his life that the watch were called coppers because they carried copper badges. But no, said Carrot, and comes from the old word caper, to capture. Carrot read books in his spare time. Not well. He'd have real difficulty if you cut his index finger off, but continuously. And he wandered around Ankh-Morpork on his day off. Captain Vimes? Vimes blinked. Sir? You have no concept of the delicate balance of the city. I'll tell you one more time. This business with the assassins and the dwarfs and this clown. You are to cease involving yourself. No, sir, I can't. Give me your badge. Vimes looked down at his badge. He never really thought about it. It was just something he'd always had. It didn't mean anything very much, really. One day, or one way or the other. It was just something he'd always had. My badge? And your sword. Slowly, with fingers that suddenly felt like bananas. And bananas that didn't belong to him at that. Vimes undid his sword belt. And your badge? Not my badge. Why not? Because it's my badge. But you're resigning anyway when you get married. Right. Their eyes met. How much does it mean to you? Vimes stared. He couldn't find the right words. It was just that he'd always been a man with a badge. He wasn't sure he could be one without the other. Finally, Lord Ventnor said, "Very well. I believe you're getting married at noon tomorrow." His long fingers picked up the gilt-embossed invitation from the desk. "Yes, you can keep your badge, then, and have an honorable retirement. But I'm keeping the sword, and the day watch will be sent down to the yard shortly to disarm your men. I'm standing the night watch down, Captain Vimes. In due course, I may appoint another man in charge at my leisure. Until then, you and your men can consider yourselves on leave. The day watch, I'm sorry? Yes, sir? One infraction, however, and the badge is mine, remember." Cuddy opened his eyes. "You're alive?" said Detritus. The dwarf gingerly removed his helmet. There was a gouge in the rib, and his head ached. "It looks like a mild skin abrasion," said Detritus. "A what?" "Oh," Cuddy grimaced. "What about you, anyway?" he said. There was something odd about the troll. It hadn't quite dawned on him what it was, but there was definitely something unfamiliar, quite apart from all the holes. I suppose the armor was some help, said Detritus. He pulled at the straps of his breastplate. 5 discs of metal slid out at around belt level. If it hadn't slowed them down, I'd be seriously abraded. What's up with you? Why are you talking like that? Like what, pray? What happened to the me big troll talk? No offense meant. I'm not sure I understand. Cuddy shivered and stamped his feet to keep warm. Let's get out of here. They trotted to the door. It was shut fast. Can you knock it down? No, if this place wasn't troll-proof, it'd be empty. Sorry. Detritus? Yes? Are you all right? Only there's steam coming off your head. I do feel hurt. Detritus blinked. There was a tinkle of falling ice. Odd things were happening in his skull. Thoughts that normally ambulated sluggishly around his brain were suddenly springing into vibrant, coruscating life. And there seemed to be more and more of them. My goodness, he said, to no one in particular. This was a sufficiently untroll-like comment, but even Cuddy, whose extremities were already going numb, stared at him. I do believe, said Detritus, that I am genuinely cogitating. How very interesting. What do you mean? More ice cascaded off Detritus as he rubbed his head. Of course, he said, holding up a giant finger. Superconductivity. What? You see, grains of impure silicone. Problem of heat dissipation. Daytime temperatures too hot. Temperature too hot. Processing speed slows down. Weather gets hotter. Brain stops completely. Trolls turn to stone until nightfall, i.e. colder temperature. However, lower temperature, enough. Brain operates faster, and I think I'm going to freeze to death soon, said Cuddy. Detritus looked around. There are small glazed apertures up there, he said. Too high to reach, if I stay on your shoulders, mumbled Cuddy, slumping down further. Ah, but my plan involves throwing something through them to attract help, said Detritus. What plan? I have, in fact, eventuated 23, but this one has a 97% chance of success, said Detritus, beaming. Haven't got anything to throw? Said Cuddy. I have, said Detritus, scooping him up. Do not worry, I can compute your trajectory with astonishing precision. And then all you will need to do is fetch Captain Vimes or Carrot or someone. Cuddy's feeble protest described an arc through the freezing air and vanished along with the window glass. Detritus sat down again. Life was so simple when you really thought about it. He was really thinking. He was 76% sure he was going to get at least 7 degrees colder. Mr. Cupmeal and Throat Dibbler, purveyor, merchant venturer, and all-around salesman, had thought long and hard about going into ethnic foodstuffs. But it was a natural career procession. The old sausage and a bun trade had been falling off lately. While there were all these trolls and dwarfs around with money in their pockets or whatever, or wherever it was trolls kept their money, and money in the possession of other people had always seemed to be against the proper natural order of things. Dwarfs were easy enough to cater for. Rat on a stick was simple enough, although it meant a general improvement in Dibbler's normal catering standards. On the other hand, trolls were basically when you got right down to it, no offense meant, speak as you find. Basically, they were walking rocks. He'd sought advice about troll food from Chrysoprase, who was also a troll, although you'd hardly know it anymore. He'd been around humans so long, he wore a suit now, and, as he said, had learned all kinds of civilized things, like extortion, money lending at 300% interest per month, and stuff like that. Chrysoprase might have been born in a cave above the snow line on some mountain somewhere, but 5 minutes in Ankh Morpork and he fitted right in. Dibbler liked to think of Chrysoprase as a friend. You'd hate to think of him as an enemy. Throat had chosen today to give his new approach a try. He pushed his hot food barrow down through the streets broad and
through streets broad and narrow, crying, "Sausages, hot sausages, in a bun, meat pies, get them while they're hot." This was by way of a warm-up. The chances of a human eating anything off Dibbler's Barrow, unless it was stamped flat and pushed under the door after 2 weeks on a starvation diet, was, by now, remote. He looked around conspiratorially. There were always trolls working in the docks, and took the cover off a fresh tray. Now then, what was it? Oh yes. Dolomitic conglomerates. Get your dolomitic conglomerates here. Manganese nodules. Manganese nodules. Get them all there. Nodule shaped. He hesitated a bit and then rallied. Pumice, two for a dollar. Roast limestones. A few trolls wandered up to stare at him. "You, sir, you look hungry," said Dibbler, grinning widely at the smallest troll. "Why not try our shale on a bun? Taste that alluvial deposit. Know what I mean?" CMOT Dibbler had a number of bad points, but species prejudice was not one of them. He liked anyone who had money, regardless of the color and shape of the hand that was proffering it. For Dibbler believed in a world where a sapient creature could walk tall, breathe free, pursue life, liberty, happiness, and step out towards the bright new dawn. If they could be persuaded to gobble something off Dibbler's hot food tray at the same time, this was all to the good. The troll inspected the tray suspiciously and lifted up a bun. "Yuck," he said. "It's got all ammonites in it." "Yuck, pardon," said Dibbler. "Just shale," said the troll. "It's stale." "Lovely and fresh, just like Mother used to hew." "Yeah, and there's bloody quartz all through this granite," said another troll, towering over Dibbler. "Clogs the arteries, quartz." He slammed the rock back on the tray. The trolls ambled off, occasionally turning around to give Dibbler a suspicious look. Stale? How can it be stale? It's rock," shouted Dibbler after them. He shrugged. "Oh well, the hallmark of a good businessman was knowing when to cut your losses." He closed the lid off the lid of the tray and opened another one. Whole food, rat on a stick, rat in a bun. Get them while they're dead. There was a crash of glass above him, and Lance Constable Cuddy landed headfirst in the tray. "There's no need to rush. Plenty for everyone," said Dibbler. "Pull me out," said Cuddy, in a muffled voice, "or pass me the ketchup." Dibbler hauled on the dwarf's boots. There was ice on them. "Just come down the mountain, have you? Where's the man with the key to this warehouse? If you liked our rat, then why not try our fine selection of..." Cuddy's axe appeared almost magically in his hand. "I'll cut your knees off," he said. "Gerhard Sock of the Butcher's Guild is who you want." "Right. Now please take the axe away." Cuddy's boots skidded on the cobbles as he hurried off. Dibbler peered at the broken remains of the cart. His lips moved as he calculated. "Here," he shouted. You owe me for 3 rats." Lord Veterinary had felt slightly ashamed when he watched the door close behind Captain Vimes. He couldn't work out why. Of course, it was hard on the man, but it was the only way. He took a key from a cabinet by his desk and walked over to the wall. His hands touched a mark on the plaster. That was apparently no different from a dozen other marks, but this one caused a section of wall to swing aside on well-oiled hinges. No one knew all the passages and tunnels hidden in the walls of the palace. It was said that some of them went a lot further than that, and there were any amount of old cellars under the city. A man with a pickaxe and a sense of direction could go where he liked just by knocking down forgotten walls. He walked down several narrow flights of steps and along a passage to a door, which he unlocked.
It swung back on well-oiled hinges. It was not exactly a dungeon. The room on the other side was quite airy and well-lit by several large but high windows. It had a smell of wooden shavings and glue. "Look out," the patrician ducked. Something bat-like clicked inward over his head, circled erratically in the middle of the room, and then flew apart into a dozen jerking pieces. "Oh dear," said a mild voice, "back to the drawing tablet." "Good afternoon, your lordship." "Good afternoon, Leonard," said the patrician. "What was that?" "I call it a flapping wing flying device," said Leonard Decorum, getting down off his launching stepladder. "It works by gutta percha strips, twisted together, tightly together. But not very well, I'm afraid." Leonard of Quorum was not, in fact, all that old. He was one of those people who started looking venerable around the age of 30 and would probably still look about the same at the age of 90. He wasn't exactly bald, either. His head had just grown up through his hair, rising like a mighty rock dome through heavy forest. Inspiration sleeted through the universe continuously. Their destination, as if they cared, is the right mind in the right place at the right time. They hit the right neuron. There's a chain reaction, and a little while later, someone is blinking foolishly in the TV lights and wondering how the hell he came up with the idea of pre-sliced bread in the first place. Leonard of Quorum knew about inspirations. One of his earliest inventions was an earth-to-metal nightcap, worn in the hope that the damn things would stop leaving their white-hot trails across his tortured imagination. It seldom worked. He knew the shame of waking up to find the sheets covered with nocturnal sketches of unfamiliar siege engines and novel designs for apple-peeling machines. The Decorums had been quite rich, and young Leonard had been to a great many schools, where he had absorbed a ragbag of information, despite his habit of staring out of the window and sketching the flight of birds. Leonard was one of those unfortunate individuals whose fate it was to be fascinated by the world, the taste, shape, and movement of it. He fascinated Lord Ventnor as well, which is why he was still alive. Some things are so perfect of their type that they are hard to destroy. One of a kind is always special. He was a model prisoner. Give him enough wood, wire, paint, and above all, give him paper and pencils, and he stayed put. The patrician moved a sack of drawings and sat down. "These are good," he said. "What are they?" "My cartoons," said Leonard. "This is a good one of the little boy with his kite stuck in a tree," said Lord Ventnor. "Thank you. May I make you some tea?" "I'm afraid I don't see many people these days, apart from the man who oils the hinges. I've come to..." The patrician stopped and prodded at one of the drawings. "There's a piece of yellow paper stuck to this one," he said, suspiciously. He pulled at it. It came away from the drawing with a faint sucking noise, and then stuck to his fingers. On the note, in Leonard's crabby backwards script, there was the words, "Memo, this seems to work." "Oh, I'm rather pleased with that," said Leonard. "I call it my handy note scribbling piece of paper with glue that comes unstuck when you want." The patrician played with it for a while. "What's the glue made of?" "Boiled slugs." The patrician pulled the paper off one hand. It stuck to the other hand. "Is that what you came to see me about?" said Leonard. "No, I came to talk to you," said Lord Ventnor, "about the gun." "Oh dear, I'm very sorry. I'm afraid it has escaped. My goodness, I thought you said you'd done away with it." "I gave it to the assassins to destroy. After all, they pride themselves on the artistic quality of their work. They should be horrified at the idea of anyone having that sort of power. But the damn fools did not destroy it. They thought they could lock it away. And now they've lost it." "They didn't destroy it?" "Apparently not, the fools. And nor did you. I wonder why." "Do you know?" "I don't know. I should never have made it. It was merely an application of principles. Ballistics, you know. Simple aerodynamics, chemical power, some rather good alloying, although I say it myself, and I'm rather proud of the rifling idea. I had to make a quite complicated tool for that, you know. Milk? Sugar? No, thank you. People are searching for it, I trust. The assassins are, but they won't find it. They don't think the right way. The patrician picked up a pile of sketches of the human skeleton. They were extremely good. Oh dear. So I am relying on the watch. This would be the Captain Vimes you have spoken of. Lord Veterinary always enjoyed his occasional conversations with Leonard. The man always referred to the city as if it was another world. Yes. I hope you have impressed upon him the importance of the task. In a way, I have absolutely forbidden him to undertake it. Twice. Leonard nodded. Ah, I think I understand. I hope it works. He sighed. I suppose I should have dismantled it, but it was so clearly a made thing. I had this strange fancy. I was merely assembling something that already existed. Sometimes I wonder where I got the whole idea. It seemed, I don't know, sacrilege, I suppose, to dismantle it. It'd be like dismantling a person. Biscuit? Dismantling a person is sometimes necessary, said Lord Veterinary. This, of course, is a point of view, said Leonard Decorum politely. You mentioned sacrilege, said Lord Veterinary. Normally, that involves gods of some sort, does it not? Did I use the word? I can't imagine there's a god of guns. It is quite hard, yes. The patrician shifted uneasily, reached down behind him, and pulled out an object. What, he said, is this? Oh, I wondered where that had gone, said Leonard. It's a model of my spinning up into the air machine. Lord Veterinary prodded the little rotor. Would it work? Oh, yes, said Leonard. He sighed. If you can find one man with the strength of 10 men who can turn the handle at about 1,000 revolutions a minute. The patrician relaxed, in a way which only then drew gentle attention to the foregoing moment of tension. Now there is in this city, he said, a man with a gun. He has used it successfully once, and almost succeeded a second time. Could anyone have invented the gun? No, said Leonard. I am a genius, he said it quite simply. It was a statement of fact. Understood. But once a gun has been invented, Leonard, how much of a genius needs someone be to make the second one? The rifling technique requires considerable finesse, and the cocking mechanism that slides the bullet assembly is finely balanced, and of course the end of the barrel must be very... Leonard saw the patrician's expression and shrugged. He must be a clever man, he said. The city is full of clever men, said the patrician. And dwarfs. Clever men and dwarfs who tinker with things. I'm very sorry. They never think. Indeed. Lord Veterinary leaned back and stared at the skylight. They do things like open the Three Jolly Luck takeaway fish bar on the site of the old temples in Dragon Street. On the night of the winter solstice, when it has happened to be a full moon. That's people for you, I'm afraid. I never did find out what happened to Mr. Hong. Poor fellow. And then there's the wizards. Tinker, tinker, tinker. Never think twice before grabbing a thread of the fabric of reality and giving it a pull. Shocking. The alchemists, their idea of civic duty is mixing up things to see what happens. I hear the bangs even here. And then, of course, along comes someone like you. I really am terribly sorry. Lord Veterinary turned the model flying machine over and over in his fingers. You dream of flying, he said.
Oh, yes. Then men would be truly free from the air. There are no boundaries. There could be no more war because the sky is endless. How happy we would be if we could but fly. Veterinary turned the machine over and over in his hands. Yes, he said, I dare say we would.
I had tried clockwork, you know. I'm sorry, I was thinking about something else. I meant clockwork to power my flying machine, but it won't work. Oh. There's a limit to the power of a spring, no matter how tightly one winds it. Oh, yes, yes. And you hope that if you wind a spring one way, all its energies will unwind the other way. And sometimes you have to wind the spring as tight as it will go, said Veterinary, and pray it doesn't break. His expression changed. Oh dear, he said. Pardon, said Leonard. He didn't thump the wall. I may have gone too far.